Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and it's got Mr. Dave North Rose Martino.
Back to Rose.
Well, we're going to have a rose. It's the rose before Christmas. The Rose Bowl, which is after Christmas. I read something about a rose.
Something about a rose.
A rose, a rice, or a Reese. I don't know. So you're all shopped for Christmas? You all ready? You got all your presents?
No.
Oh, okay.
You?
Have you got any? Oh, no, I don't buy anybody anything. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Tightwad. I don't know. Bah, humbug. I'm just...
Bah.
Yeah, I'm boring. I don't do any of that stuff, you know. I don't even give my dog a present.
No?
Yeah. How mean.
I know.
I'm a mean
poor
guy.
Dog.
Poor dog.
Poor dog, you know, doesn't get a gift.
Doesn't get a gift. Well, he gets one almost every day, please. He's spoiled.
That's true.
Spoiled old dog, you know. Anyway.
Sounds like my cat.
Yeah. Yeah. You're doing selfies with your cat, eh?
Yeah.
Gaining some attention there. I bet your cat would get more followers than you if
yes.
the cat had the website. You know, you should just do.
The cat took the picture. I photobombed it.
So why don't you start doing, you know, the Diesel page?
Yeah, maybe I should.
I bet you would.
Well, see, the thing is, he doesn't like his picture taken.
Well,
if you look at his face, it's just like, oh, no, you're taking my picture again.
But then that makes it better.
It does.
It's that discomfort that works. That's what people like. Come on.
Yes.
But we do anyway. Well, let's see. Now, speaking of animals, the book cover has got a couple of howling wolves on it. So it's called To Dance with Destiny, Holly Stone Mysteries Book 5. And it's W.L. Hawken. So thank you for being here, Wendy.
Thank you, Al. It's lovely to be here again. And hi, Dave. Rose.
Hello.
Yeah, he's a rose. He's a charming rose. He's kind of one of those black roses, I think.
Yeah.
So listen, Wendy, if I'm right, what's going on with you? You've been writing ever since the last time we talked to you, and this is book 5 you've got out now, and you're still writing. How far do you take a series like this?
I have no idea how far it will go. I mean, part of my process, my whole process, is just waiting for the characters to speak to me. So, you know, when they're ready, they tell me what to write, and I go with it. So that's kind of what happened here.
So you're kind of just playing it by ear, so to speak. It just sort of comes, and then you work on it. Do you ever get like the idea, or you get kind of where you're supposed to write and you don't want to?
Well, yeah. I mean, I have switched books from time to time because I realized I'm writing the wrong book. And I call myself an intuitive writer because I don't actually try to think about it at all. So I try to stay away from ideas, and I try to be more of a channel kind of for the characters, and listen to my muses. And I just mentioned to you that I do have a new book coming out called Writing with Your Muse, a guide to creative inspiration. And that's coming out in January. That explains the whole thing in detail and tries to teach people through strategies and techniques what I'm doing there to have that happen. So because of that being my process, with this particular book, I wrote it in 3 months last year, I guess, November, December, January. And I just listened to what the characters had to say. And when I would go to bed at night, I would say, what happens next? And I would see it or hear it or wake up with it. And then I would write the story based on what I saw.
Well, do you feel like it's like transcribing, you know, the voices in your head, the voices of the characters and of the prose?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, not so much the prose, that's part my part, like the description part, like what I see. So if you were watching a movie and somebody said, okay, write a story based on this movie, part of it would be the dialogue that's there. And the other part would be all the other stuff, you know, the setting and description and on all that sort of stuff, all the sensual stuff. So it's a little bit of both.
Well, it's a process. So how do you, you know, when you're kind of transcribing, trying to get it, how do you describe your relationship then with your main characters then?
I'm laughing because I just heard this word, I'm going to say it, called fantaromantic, which is where you kind of have romantic relationships with your fantasy characters.
Well, there we go. Now okay. We're talking.
Mm. Okay. Now we're talking. Yeah. So there's some.
Tell us more.
So there's a friendship. And I mean, this is a long-standing friendship that I've had with Estrada, who is the main hero of this series. And yeah, I mean, he's just an interesting guy. So yeah, that's kind of what it is. And when I'm actually writing, I was thinking about this at 3 o'clock in the morning last night when I was trying to think, how would I even describe this? It's like part of me is like a photographer with a movie camera out, like standing like over his shoulder. But then there's another part of me that's there within because I'm feeling all his emotion and I'm reacting to what he's experiencing or whatever, whoever the character is, whatever they're experiencing. So there's this lots of things going on, but it's definitely intimate, I suppose, is what I'm going for here.
Well, then when you go through all of these experiences with your main character like that, and you know, you're all the things, and you said it's like being there, you're inside him. How does each one of these books in this series change you then? Because, I mean, really, you're living through them, whatever happens to them. You're feeling how they feel. Mm-hmm. And the sadness, the happiness, the anger, all of the different emotions throughout the story. Does that change you?
I think so. I think I learn and grow from it, especially because in each book they seem to develop more fantastical powers and I'm having to keep up with that, you know, and how the energy works. And because they're Wicca as well, and then there's also Druid characters in here. So there's a great deal of research that goes into my books as well. So I would do all the sort of theoretical research beforehand. And then when I sit down to write or to meditate and visualize and then write, I don't have to do the research. I can just place myself right in the scene and I can see everything. So I have a really good visual sense of and hear everything. I can see and hear where we are and what's going on there.
Do you take a lot of artistic license when, you know, describing Wicca or
no, I thought you
take
were
a lot
say,
of drugs?
That's what I thought he was going to say. I did.
That would be Al.
That's why I laughed. I was like, here we go. Do I take artistic license with Wicca? Well, I've practiced Wicca and I still practice Wicca and I practice the, you know, the 8 Sabbats of the year And, I practice some druidry. So I really try and stick to what I have learned through those associations. But then I also take it a little bit farther because I also have gods.
So, oh, wow. You're busy.
Yeah.
So where do you draw from because you talked about ancient magic and mm-hmm. modern trickery and stuff like this, as mm-hmm. well as the Wicca, and now you've got God. So where do you decide on what you're going to accept?
And hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
put into the book and what you're not? Like, how do you draw that line?
I don't really draw that line. I just, sometimes I actually am like, are you kidding me? Is this what you're going to do now? I just let them go. So they're really, for me, there's a lot of trust involved as to, okay, this is what is about to happen, and I'm just going to write it and see where it goes. Because it may seem like this doesn't fit, or I don't know where we could possibly go from here. But if I trust in my process and my muses, I get where I need to go. And that's, yeah, like I said, this book happened in 3 months. The draft came out very quickly.
Well, then that's what I was kind of trying to get at earlier. So when you get this and you have these ideas, you just put it down. So you don't really challenge the process itself or the ideas you write down?
No, not in that way. I mean, the process for me, like I can say right now, I'm going through a bit of a difficult period with it. And I mean, part of one of the chapters in my new book that's coming up is called, you know, What to Do When Your Muse Goes AWOL. And it's kind of explaining that, like, this whole theory is based on science, actually. So brainwaves. So do you know about brainwaves and megahertz and all that stuff?
I haven't had any brainwaves.
Oh, ever. no brainwaves? Okay.
It's dead over here. It's just...
Oh, no. Okay. Well, that can be good, actually. Yeah. I try for that sometimes. But
more relaxing.
So basically, like condensed primer is that when we're in our regular mode of living and like what we're doing right now, or we're marketing, or we're doing business, or our tax, or something, chatting away, we're in beta mode, which is a pretty high, it's at the highest frequency of brain waves that are in your head. And then what you do is you try to come down a little bit into alpha waves, and that brings you into a more creative space. So if you're daydreaming, kind of relaxing, that will bring you down a bit. Where I try to get is the next level, which is theta. And theta is that place of kind of, just before you go to sleep, you know, the gray zone, that sort of luminous time where anything can happen because you're freed up and you're going in and out of dreams and that kind of a thing. That's where I try to write from. So I like to have, I need lots of good quality time to be able to do that, because I can't just say, okay, now I'm switching and I'm going to sit and write for an hour. I don't think when I write, so I can't just switch that quickly unless I do a whole meditative process to get me there. And so that's part of my process, is doing the meditative thing, going into that space, and then letting it happen, right? The last state is delta, which is deep sleep, right? So you try to catch it. But I'm having a difficult time right now because of circumstances, I'm doing a lot of things that that take me away from that quality time where I can just relax and go into those states of mind, like looking after a 2-year-old. So,
oh, yeah, there's no quiet time there, is there?
No, there is no quiet time with the little red-haired boy. It's, yeah.
Well, how do you go into those states? Is it just through meditation, or do you use music? Or, because I know there's different types of ambient music that will bring you into those states, or supposedly will.
Yeah, so I have several different things that I do. And, you know, one of them is doing some visualization exercises first. Different types of meditation, like just breathe in, breathe out, watching your breath, that kind of meditation. And then, yeah, binaural beats, I think is how it's pronounced.
Right.
And I also use shamanic drumming, because I've written shamanic scenes with Strata, where we actually take a shamanic journey in the book. And I've taken that journey with them. And then for 20 minutes, half an hour, with the drums going, my earphones in, and then I sit up and I write what we just experienced. So that, yeah, that journey is in book 3, actually.
Wow.
So
so that's like an acid trip in book 3.
Well, yeah, it kind of is, because they're fighting vampires. So, you know, it's like high stakes. And the vampire has stolen his child. his baby on her first birthday. I mean, think about that. That is pretty brutal, right?
Yeah.
So it is kind of, they need to really get down with how are they going to deal with this.
Yeah. I mean, so are you able to write without doing this?
Without drugs, you were going to say.
Yeah, without doing the drugs and the acid. No, I'm just saying, because it seems like, you know, quite often some people, they can just turn it on, sit down, turn it on, write, mm-hmm. turn it off, whatever. And other people need to be in a mood and condition. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're more in that. You have to be in a certain state. And so can you do it the other way, or is it you just really have to be in this state?
You know, to really reach like my peak of creativity, where I'm saying, tell me what happens next, and then I get an answer and I see a whole situation occur. For that to happen, I need to be in this space for sure. I'm not the only one. There are lots of other people. When I was writing the book, I was looking at all kinds of quotes by people who use this type of a process. So.
Oh, I'm sure. Just look at the news. There's.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are. I mean, you know, even Bob Dylan said, I don't even know where my early songs came from. Like, they just kind of were gifted to me. And I don't know if drugs were involved there either. I'm just saying it's, you know, there are lots of other people who use that, this kind of creative process.
So because you do this and you're doing it successfully, you're getting books out and all this stuff, mm-hmm. is there something that you would say to someone that is trying to write this way or do this way? Is there some sort of method or, you know, if someone has issues or trying to get into that state and they can't, what do you recommend?
Well, practice. I mean, meditation is a practice. And the more often that you, you know, do it, in whichever way, like David said, you know, there's videos out there, like visualization videos that you can do. Anything that will bring you out of monkey mind or that kind of crazy day-to-day left brain analytical thinking mode is going to help you get creative. And the more that you do that and allow yourself to go there, the easier it becomes to get there.
But I think the videos Dave talks about, you don't, they're not the same.
I don't know.
I'm just saying. Okay. Yeah. I'm just saying. I have a feeling that.
My favorite easy one that, you know, if anybody wants to look it up is there's a couple of British guys called the Honest Guys that are on YouTube. And they actually do a whole Middle Earth Shire series where they take you on a guided tour into like the Shire, and you know, you get to meet hobbits and elves and all kinds of things. So depending on, you know, what your jam is, there's lots of different guided visualizations. That's a good way in. Or going to a teacher. You know, I really came up with this book because I was studying mediumship and psychic development for about a year with a teacher and some other people a couple of years ago, because I was writing a lighthouse mystery where the girl became a medium and I needed to know how that worked. And so I thought, oh, and then this mediumship class came across my computer and I thought, well, there you go. You better go. So I did. And sure enough, sir, I was talking to spirits pretty soon, you know. And so was everybody that was at the class. So I think part of it is finding your tribe. Going to those kind of classes as a group meditation can be really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just don't want to do that while you're driving.
No, but I also know lots of people who...
who do?
Yes. who I actually know one Vancouver writer who does all his... He's a plotter, but he does all his ideas driving around Vancouver. Because that's where he sets his books. And he just basically does that. And I've actually done that before where I've driven around on autopilot when I'm in the middle of writing a draft. And I get somewhere and I'm like, oh, man, this is not where I planned to go. I was supposed to be going to, you know, somewhere else. So it does happen. It does happen.
So let me get this. You get into this trance and mm-hmm. you're in this world and mm-hmm. whatever's going on. And you actually get into the vehicle and start driving around. And then you wake up and you don't know where you are.
No, not quite.
I'm just trying to figure this out.
It's more like, oh, I need to go to the grocery store, and you're in the middle of a draft, and all of a sudden you're like, you're into your draft, and you go down the wrong street, and you don't notice that kind of thing. But you're still driving the car. Like, okay,
right.
It's just that you're sort of not really thinking about what you're doing in the moment because you're somewhere else.
So all of a sudden you realize you're at the border crossing and you've got a bloody shovel in the back seat. And you're like, no, sir, I don't know what I'm doing. I was.
Is that one of your true crime guys do that, do they?
I'm sure. You know, the people in this world, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So you've done this. Now, when this happens then, like, you're doing it in this state and this comes to you and you do this stuff. Do you have any input in the part of a subtext, a meaning, or a lesson to be learned through each one of these books?
No, I try not to do lessons. I was a teacher for way too long, and like a high school teacher. Yeah. And
you made it out alive.
Barely. Yeah. I actually took a year off and went and became a lighthouse keeper. That's how stressed out I was. But granted, out of that experience came this book that I have written. It's a lighthouse mystery where the girl becomes a medium. And out of that came mediumship, and out of that came my writing process. So it's, you know, it's a really interesting kind of a way leads on to way.
Yeah, one thing leads to another in it.
Yeah.
When you're doing that, but do you think one comes out organically?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there is a lesson in each book?
I wouldn't say there's a lesson in each book.
Did you think there's a meaning or a subtext? Do you think
like a theme or something?
Yeah, because if I was to read, let's say, book five here, I'm reading mm-hmm. this book, and besides the entertainment and the excitement and all the, you know, trickery and stuff going on, mm-hmm. when I finish the book, do you think there's some sort of a message? Yeah.
Well, I think with this one, and the title is To Dance with Destiny, and destiny is a wicked dancer, right? I mean, there's that old notion of don't mess with fate and don't mess with destiny, because, you know, it's just going to make things worse. And when I was writing this, to me, the thought to me was it was called To Right a Wrong, because this book is about, I was telling you a little bit about the ravens stealing the vampires, which are ravens, stealing his child. And that happens in book three. And then in book four, we time travel. That's a whole other discussion, to Iron Age Ireland. And at the end of book four, the god Cernunnos brings him back through a wormhole. They ride through. There's him. There's Estrada, Sorsha, and Connell, who is an Iron Age bard, and they ride through a wormhole with like pretty much nothing but the clothes they're wearing and on these horses into modern Ireland. But what he realizes is that when he left, it was September, and now it's June 21st. It's summer solstice, and in between summer solstice and September is when the vampire stole his child. So he goes, oh, wow, wait a second. I've got all this knowledge. I'm ahead of schedule. I can go after these vampires and stop all of that stuff from happening that happens in To Render a Raven. So he tries to rewrite it. Are you with me? Okay.
No.
So that's what happens. So he decides he's going to right a wrong, because there were a lot of wrongs that happened in To Render a Raven. It ended quite tragically. And he wants to stop all that stuff from happening. So his plan is to get home as soon as he can and go on the offensive and wipe out the vampires, because he knows where they live. He knows what they're like. They don't know that he knows. So he has all these great plans. But then, can you change destiny? That's the question. So in terms of your question about a theme, that might be the theme. Is it possible? Is it possible to change destiny or fate or not? I'm not going to tell you.
No, of course not. You're a big meanie. I know. That's how it goes.
But I can tell you that things get really messed up when you try, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It happens to me every day.
Okay.
Do you ever think about the reader then when you're doing a book of this and what your reader is going to think of the book?
No, not really.
Even in the edit part, like, you know, because when you got it together and you're in the editing and before it gets published, are you conscious? You're not conscious really of what your readers of the first four books, let's say, are going to think?
I don't think so. I mean, I know that, like, anybody who's following me is doing it for a reason because of the characters and because they're kind of different. So, I mean, okay, wait, I am conscious of the reader enough that I will put in enough information so that they can read each novel as a standalone without being confused. Okay. I think that is something I do. But the storyline itself, no. And I mean, I've had, you know, I've got a couple of readers that said, I love Estrada, but he is so irritating. I mean, you just want to slap him up the head. You just want to do it because he's very irritating at times and he makes really bad decisions. And that's just who he is. Yeah.
I can relate. Well, what happens to these characters now when you go on a break from writing or doing something else, you're in another project and stuff? Do these characters just disappear or do they still linger?
I just leave them wherever they are. And they're I mean, they're lingering out there. And I mean, if I called him in now and said, what are you doing? What do you want to do now? I'm sure he would tell me.
Is it like Bewitched? You twinkle your nose?
No, unfortunately not. No.
It's not that easy.
It's more like, no, I actually have a conversation. And I mean, that's how I started writing To Kill a King, actually. I was writing this Lighthouse book and I was about, I don't know, third or half of the way through it. And I was missing him. And so one night I said, hey, where are you? What are you doing? What's going on with you? Because I had left him. I did feel bad after To Render a Raven. I left him in a real funk because it was quite tragic. And so I was like, what are you doing? And then the next morning I woke up and I knew where he was. I knew what he was feeling. I knew what all was going on. And I went, okay, you're writing the wrong book. So then I just started writing To Kill a King and I went with it, you know.
Because he wants to get going. You leave him in a bad state and go about doing something else and it's okay for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure. Right. For sure. So, you know, I mean, he did things in To Dance with Destiny that I questioned.
But who's the boss?
Well, exactly. Right. Like, it's not my story. So he did what he wanted to do. And I mean, he suffered for it, which is what happens when you do something silly. I don't know if it was silly, but.
Well, do you think anybody in life, in your real life, like physical life outside, do you think any of the people you interact with get into your book somehow, get written into it?
I don't think so.
No.
No, I don't. No. I don't feel that. No.
You don't feel anybody's energy in any of the characters?
No. Do you? I'm just curious. Do you?
No. No. Well, the thing is, but I'm writing real people.
Well, I thought you wrote fiction now too.
I am, but I'm not published in fiction yet. So at the moment I'm not equipped to talk.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
But I'm totally insane. So nobody cares about that.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. See,
okay. Okay.
See, that doesn't matter. I'm a nutball, right?
But in a good way.
If, no, it's interesting. Are you conscious about how much violence goes into the book then? I mean, because it sounds like the story comes out and it's all this, you know, action or gripping and you got things happening and stuff. Do you curtail some of the violence?
No.
No?
I mean, I try to write it, I was going to say from a literary point of view, but, you know, I try not to make it like slasher kind of violence. And I don't particularly like horror, although I've been told that To Render a Raven is a bit of a borderline horror. But I mean, I just picked up a book last night and I thought, oh, this looks good. I'm going to try reading it. And I read the first part and went, oh, we're moving into horror land here. No, I don't want to do this. So I put it down again. So that's not my thing, but there, of course there is violence because we've got vampires and we've got, them killing vampires, you know, trying to eat them. But I think the emotion is at play more so than the physical violence. I will say with this book, I was a little bit, there's a lot of sex in this book.
And, oh, there you go. See, now we're getting to it.
It's not all depicted. Like one of the reviewers here says, great erotic scenes of intimacy, many of which aren't even sexual per se. So there's more intimacy going on than there is,
It's not explicit.
Yeah,
it's in the mind. It's a suspense and it's kind of tension in the mind, right?
Yes.
More. You know, mind you, I have to wonder, you know, when J.P. McLean Burger says a tall, sexy drink of satisfaction.
Well, that's what she said. What can I say?
Well, that says it all, doesn't it?
Well, there is. It's, and, you know, I'm happy for this one because, you know, Estrada, this is book five and he has desperately tried to find the right person and continues to find the wrong people. And I'm hoping that he did find his happy ending finally here. So I don't know.
I hope so too, you know.
Yeah. I hope so too.
He deserves some happiness after five books of you.
Well, I know, right? Like that, you know, it's a lot. I mean, he's had happy moments, but I mean, to have some kind of like, oh, this might be the right man for me finally, right? Like, he's really tried. And I mean, so there are two LGBTQ relationships in this book. One is with him and the other is with Sorsha. And so Sorsha is an Irish archaeologist that's been in three of the books. And she kind of hooks up with her old girlfriend from university in this. And so there's Sorsha subplot is happening at the same time in this.
Is there any difficulty in writing characters like that? Like a man character being with another man, considering you're a woman?
Am I?
Well, this is what I've been told. Now, I mean, this might not be true.
You know, yeah. I mean, I think philosophically, you know,
yeah,
we're all a little of each. But no, and I think that comes because I'm so close to him, and I just, you know, the first scene I had to write with him in To Charm a Killer, I thought, how am I going to do this? And this was many years ago, okay, that I wrote To Charm a Killer. And he had gone along and kind of sacrificed himself to a serial killer. And the guy was in love with him. And he had said, you know, let her out, let this woman go and take me. I'll do whatever you want. And so he's a man of his word. So he went with this guy. And he kind of wakes up and he's tied up. On his bed in a cabin and with a blindfold on. And I'm like, how am I going to do this? And, so I just kind of,
that sounds fun.
Okay. All right. So, you know, it's from, if I'm in his point of view, then I'm just writing what I'm experiencing through him. That makes sense.
Sounds like fun. Good old time.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing like being tied up in a bed and blindfolded. I don't know. It sounds pretty good. So I noticed, speaking of being tied up, I noticed you're on the cover of, is it Books and Buzz magazine now?
I am, yeah. That was so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you look very happy laying on the ground.
Thank you. Thank you. And I wasn't tied up on that, just so that everybody's clear about that.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Someone pushed you down
and they took pictures.
We were just trying for some, you know, we did a big photo shoot on Vancouver Island and we were just trying from a lot of different shots and I sent a lot of different shots and that's the one that Tim picked. So I really like it. I like it because I think it's really Christmassy. And
oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So that's good. Did you like going out and doing things like that? And do you live events now that COVID's kind of in the past now? Are you doing any live events?
I do. I love doing readings. And this year in particular, because on Vancouver Island, I did a lot of summer markets. And you know who got me into that is JP McLean, because she's over here too, you know. And so Joanne and I, you know, she said, you know, check out these markets. So I actually did really well at summer markets, and I found that that's the best way to sell books. It really is. Yeah.
Why is it just it's more intimate, you're closer
yes.
to people, or?
Yes. People want to pick up your books and hold them and leaf through them and talk to you about your process. You know, I'll explain the whole series to them. And this summer in particular, I had a lot of people that were vacationing, and they'd be like, well, what's the first one? And I said, To Charm a Killer. And I'd explain it, and they read the back, and then they're like, oh, this is really good. What if I like it and I'm not here? How am I going to get it? I'm just going to take the whole series. And so I sold several of all four books in the series over the summer, which is fantastic. I mean,
yeah.
you know, print
yeah.
books. Yeah.
yeah that's
so,
great.
Yeah. yeah. And with my tattoo series, people seem to be drawn into the tattoos. You know, they stand oh. out. So, which is what you were saying with the two wolves on the cover. That's a tattoo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Yeah, you see, for me, I'm usually just leaving them around the malls and the bathrooms.
Oh, <That's>, Ooh, okay.
Well, you know, you do what you have to, right? And people pick up the books and food courts and, bus stops.
I just had a flashback to when George,
the bathroom.
George Costanza took a book into the bathroom, and I think it was an art book on Seinfeld. And then he brought it back out again, and they were like, oh my gosh, no, you have to buy that now. Sorry.
There you go.
I just went, there you go.
No, that's, you yeah. know, that's how I get them to buy my books.
Well, there you go. Right. You know, but yeah, that I really do enjoy going and talking to people and doing readings and things like that. So yeah.
Wow. So what do you got coming up here? Like you're working on another project right now, you said.
Yeah, well, I've got, so Destiny came out for Samhain, which is Halloween. And then January 9th, I've got Writing With Your Muse coming out. And what I'm hoping to do with that is to start doing some Facebook Live meditation sessions for writers if they want to join me, and we go and I will take them into a space and we will write together, because then I can demonstrate the process a little bit more, because I did actually workshop this with people. I'm not just, you know, making it up as I go along.
Right.
I have tested it and it works. So I'm happy to do that. And then right now I'm really trying to get some time to draft a completely new story. From 1924, the Rum Runner time historical novel, set in Victoria, BC and the Gulf Islands, which is interesting, you know, because we had no prohibition. The Americans had prohibition. And so that we were running booze across, and they were coming up and grabbing it and taking it out. So
yeah, we're always helping the freest country in the nation.
Right? But that, yeah, I mean, yeah.
So every time they make something illegal, which is what seems yeah. to be all the time, yeah. we have to pick up the slack, you know.
For sure. And it spins off, I know you do true crime, it spins off a true crime. It spins off the murder of Bill Gillis and his son Billy, who were, I think, the only people ever murdered in Canadian waters, or the first people murdered. And they were, it was a brutal murder, happened in the Gulf Islands. And so it spins off of that.
Was it to do with the rum running?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. It was hijackers. I mean, because, you know, of course the good Americans were coming up. Pete, like legitimate Pete, like there were good guys coming up and, you know, taking like 350 cases of, booze over to the States, and you know, everybody was making a nice profit on it. But then there were also the unscrupulous guys who were up there going, hey, we can pirates. They were basically pirates. And they were just looking for boats that were hanging around looking to be, you know, that they knew had a hold full of booze. And yeah, so they were attacked by these three guys that were pirates, and it was pretty brutal murders.
Well, so how do you, when you're doing that kind of work, Mm-hmm. How is your process then? It must be completely different, right?
Well, okay. So that's a good question, actually. So I've done a lot of research on those people. They don't really play a big part in the book because it starts kind of with their murder. But it's a spinoff from there. And so I've got all the research part done. So I know what it's like and what the dangers are and whatnot. And then I go into this mode, which is what I'm trying to do now. So I can, you know, I can go into the girl's, like there's a young girl, I can go into her grandmother's house and I can fully see the whole thing and how it's set up. And they're actually psychics. Her grandmother and her grandmother's friend are psychics who use tarot and Ouija boards. Because, you know, in the 1920s, it was a big thing to do that. You know, Arthur Conan Doyle and all that.
Yeah, there was a real big thing after the First World War, right? People were trying to connect with their dead. And it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I'm finding that part really fascinating, and the 20s and that time between the First World War, I find that's a really, really kind of interesting part. So there's doing the research and then still slipping into the mode so I can say, okay, what's happening? And I mean, I just had a thing with that where I took her to the grandmother's house and I thought one thing was going to happen and all of a sudden this other thing happened and I'm like, what? Really? Okay. How am I supposed to do this? So I'm going to go with it. And I don't know why it's in there. I don't know if it's going to come back later in the book, if there's a reason for it. And that's the trust piece, you know.
Is there a lot of sex in this book too?
No.
Well,
no. I know, no. Right? No, there isn't.
Well, you know, there's not always room for it.
Yeah, this one maybe want more of a teen book.
Okay.
That and the Lighthouse book too. I think they're more a teen book.
You find your relationship with your characters are different than what they are in your fantasy books?
Well, they're definitely not as like casual. I think because it's just like I've been in a relationship with, you know, Estrada and Michael for like since 2006. That's a long time. That's a long.
Why don't you get married?
Long time. Why would he get married?
Why don't you get married? Like,
who? Me and Estrada?
Yeah.
I think I'm too old for him now. Oh. See, there's the rub, right? You know, like I have aged, but he's only 2 years older than when he.
Well, that's
started.
Not fair.
I know that's not fair.
Yeah.
That's really not fair.
Well, no,
nope, it's not going to happen.
Well, so when's that book come out? Or do you have any dates or you don't?
Oh, the Rum Runner book?
Yeah.
You know what? It depends when I write it, when I get to it. Like I said, right now I've got a lot of commitments that I'm trying, you know, that my life is in a little bit of turmoil right now. So I need those chunks of time. So we'll see. We'll see how I do over Christmas, if I can just really get into it and hammer it out. Because the editing process is a whole different thing. So after I have the draft done, And I go, okay, this actually works. I might finish the draft and then I might put it on the hero's journey and test out the plot after I write it, because that's kind of how I roll. And then if I like where it's going, then I'll send it to a developmental editor and then I'll have them come back and they do the part of like, well, maybe your readers need to know more about this, or can we get more of an emotional beat here? I'd like to see a reaction to this. And so I'll take all of that information and then I'll do another rewrite. And then after that, and then there'll be beta readers as well. And then there'll be a copy edit at the end, kind of a thing. So
right.
It's a long process that after the actual writing, which I don't know how many people know about that. But.
And so the workshops you want to do with people with the nonfiction book, have you been doing that before, like for a long time?
Not for a long time, but I've definitely given workshops before. And I think it'll be a pretty neat thing to be able to do. I'm interested to see how people respond to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot in it for you as well. There's a connection, right, with other people.
Yeah, and I would be also doing the same thing they're doing. So, you know, we would both be kind of going into a meditative state and then writing. And then, so what we did in our workshops where we were live, was then we read, we shared what we read, and people were floored by what they wrote. You know, it's like tapping into another level of subconscious, really.
Well, now that the drugs are decriminalized in British Columbia, I guess that makes it easier too, right?
I suppose.
You don't have to worry about getting busted or raided, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, listen, where do people find you? Like, do you have social media, website?
I do.
Tiki bars? Like, where do people find you?
Blue Haven Press is my, bluehavenpress.com. Is the place to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, perfect. Now we're going to have that up, your website, your book,
yeah,
everything, so they can find you easily, and we wish you the best.
Well, thank you. And as usual, I really enjoy chatting with you about everything.
Yeah. All that stuff. Heroin. So now the book, To Dance with Destiny, Holly Stone Mysteries, Book 5. And our guest is the author, W.L. Hawken. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, Dave.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.